Okay, this is the Rambam's introduction to the 10th Perek in the Masechta Sanhedrin called Perek Chelek. Now, Perek Chelek deals with people who have Chelek Olam Haba, people who don't have Chelek Olam Haba. In the introduction of the Rambam, he has really three issues that he deals with. And the other two issues turn out, in my opinion, to be more important than the first issue. The first issue is what is Olam Haba, and what is Gan Eden, and what is Gehinnom, the way he sees it. And Yemos HaMashiach, we have three or four concepts which are mentioned many times, bandied about. Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach, Olam Haba, the world to come, Gan Eden, Gehinnom, let's say, four concepts. So he tries to give us what he thinks are these things, the best we can understand it from his perspective. In the course of that discussion, though, he gets into a very important discussion, which is probably even more important than the first, and that is doing mitzvahs for schar, or doing mitzvahs, we say lishma, for the reward or because of fear of punishment, and the other side, doing mitzvahs lishma, just because they're the right thing to do. Ahavas Hashem, shulabav Hashem, yiras Hashem, meaning yiras haromamus, or that's the second discussion. And then the third discussion is the ikrim, what he considers the fundamentals of Jewish faith, the 13. Ikrim of the Rambam, which is of course a very important topic. So the beginning discussion is in, at least he's beginning to talk about the nature of Olam Haba, etc., and Gan Eden, and then we get into the topic of Schar, through Mitzvah Lishma, and Shelo Lishma. So let's start. Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelek Mabo Shem V'Amech. So he says like this: "V'isav daba b'chan b'korim rabin b'emuna gedolim v'nechbadim ad ma'od." So I have to discuss a lot of fundamental ideas, which are extremely important and worthy. Have yodea, you should know ki balei haTorah, that the people who study Torah nechuku deotehem. The Tova Shetagila Adam Vasiya Samitzvos Shetivonu Be'em Hashem Yisbarach Alidei Moshe Ben Alav Shalom. That the Bali Torah B'machloket, differences of opinion about the good which a person achieves for doing mitzvos which God commanded through Moshe Rabbeinu. Hura Shetimtza Oto Kishiyavu Aleihem. And also the punishment or the evil which falls a person when he violates mitzvos. Machlokot rabot ma'od, many, many arguments, v'ishtanut sichleihem, based upon their different ways of thinking. Nishtabshu v'hem hasfar shibush gadol, there's a lot of confusion in this area. Hashikimat otimsa b'shum ponim adam, it's hard to find a person who has a clarity in the area. You never find anybody who has an absolutely clear view of it. It's all a lot of confusion.
What does shibush mean?
Shibush usually means mistakes. A lot of mistakes. It's a little harsh to say that. I'd rather translate shibush as meaning a confusion, which is less harsh.
That could be the shibush is modifying if you like simtza.
But simtza
if you find something, if you think that you found clarity on it, you're mistaken. It's not that what's been written is mistaken. If you think you figured it out, you're mistaken.
Oh, okay, that's also possible. Good. So now he's like this. The various ideas about the ultimate reward. Katri Shona Soveres Kiatovu Gan Eden. One group says that the ultimate good is Gan Eden, Garden of Eden. V'chi hu makom sha'ochlin b'shal simbo. It's a place where you eat and drink. Mibli amal aguf, without a lot of strenuous physical exertion. Li yigia, without having to exert oneself. Shiesh l'sham batim mabonim tovos mitos mutzos b'meshi. You have there very good brick houses and very fine beds with silk. Naros moshkim yayin shmanim, and you have rivers which flow with wine and oil. Mekusamim, good smell and oil. V'habed v'amad v'amin, and a lot of things of this kind of venue, which means a wonderful physical world. And that's Gan Eden. V'chi havahu, and what is the ultimate evil? Gehenom. V'hu makom bo ba'esh, it's a place which has huge fires. Shebosofim hagvios, where they burn bodies. Mitztarim shom b'nei adam b'mini hatzav v'inui, and people suffer their tremendous pain. Yarech sipurim, there's a lot of stories about that. V'katazot hevi rayas v'rosa mediva b'seinu zal. This group brings proofs from the words of the rabbis, Mikros, Kotur, from Sukkim, Shepashtam, Nu'utam, Mashahim, Omrim, Lukulaluba, with the simple reading of these words of the rabbis and the Sukkim fits very nicely into what they're saying completely, or most of it. So basically, it's Gan Eden. Is physically very, very comfortable, and Gehenom is physically very, very uncomfortable, to say the least. This is one group.
This is only physical, right?
This is only a physical.
Well, once we're at this point, doesn't the physical not matter anymore? Does it only jump into this?
According to this view, people will still have the same basic physical body and the same physical urges, except that things will be taken care of in one way or the other.
Is there a sheet maybe that's talked about spiritually?
Yeah, right, there'll be a group about the spiritual, perhaps the spiritual the side of this. So the first group is, what he does is basically he's going to set up different views, and then we'll see that maybe some people combine different views together. But right now we're setting up. So the first scenario of Gan Eden and Gehenom is a physical one, where Gan Eden is physical bliss and Gehenom is physical suffering. Kachniya, second group, and the way they understand Gan Eden and Gehenom. Tizbar v'tachshov sh'atov ha'miucheles v'yimosa Mashiach Mary Golet, that the ultimate good which we hope for is the days of the Mashiach. I hope you'll come very quickly. V'chi ba'oto hazman yu b'nei adam kulam malachim kulam chayim v'kayimim la'ad. In those days people will be angels, they will live forever. V'yagbiu b'komotam, and they'll be very tall. V'yibu v'yatsmu, and there'll be very many. Ad sheyashivu kol ha'olam, and they'll fill the whole world. La'ad la'olam, forever and ever. So basically fa'ad means that they'll go into space and live forever. So the universe is infinite, so you have enough planets so that you can just keep on hovering. Yes.
This isn't a discussion of Gan Eden, this is just a discussion of
Well, this is already
the ultimate goods. Right? What the point of this whole thing called existence?
Right.
So on the one hand we have this very simplistic understanding of what seems to be a simplistic understanding of how it is.
Right.
As the ultimate good.
Right.
Right? And then we're
well, now we
the ultimate good is not a Gan Eden kind of life, but in this world, it's existence, but free of
Yetzer Hara.
I mean, is he
well, by bringing in the concept of Kulam Malachim, Kulam Chaim, Vekem Lo'ah, in other words, eternity. Does he speak about at this point that spiritually there's a different level? I don't know whether in his description of the second cut he's giving that. I would think that probably yes. If
it sounds like a Ramban kind of Tikkun Eitz Hadat kind of
Ramban says there'll be no more Eitz Hara, we free Eitz Hadat. That's what it sounds like. And therefore people will, in other words, it'll be there. It'll be free Eitz Hadat. So you live forever, because Adam HaRishon was supposed to live forever. Yes?
Not to get too much of a topic, but I was just wondering, you already mentioned that according to the second opinion, if we have something that we refer to as Galut now, outside of Eretz Yisrael, then how could we understand the concept of according to the Torah that we now have, how could we understand the concepts where people got further than Eretz Yisrael, not much further into like other systems of how the world would work, meaning that you wouldn't find other planets of the like Earth.
The Midrashim say that Eretz Yisrael is spread around the world. It says that the concept of Eretz Yisrael will become the world. So we do know that according to Halacha, you can be Mekadesh other lands and give them the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael as long as you do it the right way, right time, right place, right method. So that could happen.
Also, yeah.
And I also think, you know, what's his name? The great Mekubal, the American Mekubal, who passed away young, wrote Aryeh Kaplan. So in one of his books he speaks about going to space, etc. Fact is, if God made this ultimate infinite universe, it would seem reasonable. I mean, not knowing, not that everything happens is reasonable according to human logic, but why would God create the ultimate infinite universe, which we know exists there with the stars and so many planets, if man is never going to go there to see what they are? Just that we should know God is infinite and great, possibly, but it would seem, just like everything else in this world, God created, and it says, La'avdel l'shamra, redu ba'aretz v'kipshua, God tells man, you will conquer the world. Everything.
The world is in the universe.
That's a question. I mean, it said in the Pasuk, Shemaim, Shemaim Lashem, for Eretz Nosam of Nei Adam. So what does Eretz include? Does Eretz include just Earth, planet Earth? So planet Earth will be totally conquered and subdued by man? Or does Eretz mean the physical universe that our five senses can perceive? Shemayim meaning the spiritual world. Surely man, while he's in this world, cannot go to Shemayim. Only Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu HaNavi that we know two. The guy in Plain Miami, but we know that's not true. But the two people that we do know from our position who went to Shemayim alive is Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu HaNavi. But I once had a shiur from the Rav when the first Sputnik went, the first spaceman went up, the Russian fellow, Yuri Gaganov or whatever his name was. So someone called up the Rav and said, Rebbe.
The first Russian spaceman.
Yeah, first Russian spaceman. And someone called the Rav and said, Rebbe, this Akasha says, Shemaim, Shemaim, Lashem, V'aretz Nasam, V'nei Adam. How could a man go into the Shemaim? So I remember the Rav said that I told him, Shemaim doesn't mean what we see with our eyes, the Shemaim. The Shemaim means this heavens, seven heavens, which we don't see with our eyes, which are spiritual, the other worlds, those are Lashem or Malachim. But man can, Oretz is even the moon, stars, all of this is called Oretz. Oretz Nasan Levnei Adam. It's beyond our imagination.
The ancient mind, the Shem, Trevor told me, the Peter Zohar told me this, that the letter Aleph is a letter that can be put in by itself, so you put it in front of the Shemayim, it's ancient mind together, and that's nothing we can imagine.
That's right. Yes. So that's why I think my theory then is, I subscribe to that view of the Rav, that Aretz means the whole physical world which we see, including the stars and that so on. I also subscribe to this cat that says that eventually the tzaddikim, people who merit Gan Eden and Olam Haba, will have a life like the Ramban says, Adam, before the sin. And then we probably will go to the other planets because the people are going to live such a long life. So there's not going to be enough room for all the people in the world. We're going to have to go to other planets, but there's so many galaxies and so many solar systems, so many places to live.
So much of everything is so different, meaning how? What's the first mitzvah you have to really get is Rosh Chodesh. But if there's no Yireah, at least not in the same way that we understand it on this world, then how can you possibly have the same thing? You have a completely different calendar, a completely different idea of the week, you know, different time.
Well, that gets into how different will the world be? Well, in other words, in this second cut, in this second view, which says people will live forever, and so on,
you're talking about planets already. You're talking about Jupiter has 16 moons or something.
It's on top.
We'll worry about it when we get to it. But the thing is,
you've made Adam Kula Malachim. So it doesn't mean they're going to be Malachim. So you can say that it's either in terms of a psychology. Is he at any? Does this view necessarily about that man is going to be
Malachim,
being corporeal?
Maybe.
Must be that man is preserved. Man is alive. Man is preserved. But Malachim means something else. It's probably in terms of Ritzoyim.
It doesn't have Yetzer Hara.
It doesn't necessarily have to be that the body is rejected.
Right. Because he says in a few lines that they say. Right away we'll see that they say there's clothing.
Oh yeah,
well, that's what I was going to say. So what is that? So they'll be big. They'll probably get much taller.
In terms of stature? In terms of...
Maybe stature. Or maybe they'll just be physically taller. They'll be 7 feet tall. As it is, today the average person is much taller than the average person was even 100 years ago, certainly 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, but this is a different problem. Nowadays people have enough food to eat.
There's a genetic process which are making people taller over the years.
Oh, evolution. Right. It's not interesting.
Whatever you want to call it, but there's some genetic flow that the genes for tallness are dominant, so therefore we're becoming taller and taller as time goes on.
If you see generation of Chinese people living here from China, they're maybe up to this point.
But in the West,
if
I don't know what about China.
If you see their children,
I'm also taller.
Taller. Twice as
me. That's the way it is. So anyway, this is apparently in Olam Haba, and in this second view, in other words, let's say this way, it's still a physical world, but the physical world has dramatically changed, and the world around man and man himself has dramatically changed. So first of all, people live forever, which is an amazing change. They are taller, and then Otam Mashiach Kifi Machshavasim Yichya Lo Ad Beis Hashem Yisbach. Of course, the Melech Mashiach lives forever. And the world will grow clothing and bread. Many things will happen which are right now impossible. Correct. So that, for example, it says that the Zayv will be with the Keves, that the wolf will be friendly with the sheep. These things will be there. These things will have changed. The world will be a completely different world. And what is the ultimate evil? If a person doesn't get that, he doesn't merit to see it. The proof to all of this is brought from many statements of the rabbis, Viksuvim, the Mikra, many sentences in the Tanakh, Yaskim, Pashtam, the Mashe Moment. It's very simply read, these are exactly what they say. Oh, look at Tzasa, whether everything they say, some of the things that they say. This, by the way, is the view of the Ramban and the Raivit. This is known as the Ramban's view and the Raivit's view, that they have that view.
Who's the first view?
Well, the first view doesn't say who it is. Maybe the Rambam himself is considered to be the author of the first view, but we'll see later what the Rambam himself says. Kachlishis, the third view. Tachshov ki atovash en kuver tchias amesim. The ultimate good which we hope for is living of the dead. Hushiyichi adam achamoto v'yachzor im krovu v'nei beito. A person comes back to life with his friends and relatives. V'yochal v'yishte v'lo yomus od. He lives, drinks, eats and drinks without death. The evil is if he doesn't come back to life to be together with his family. They bring proofs from many statements of the rabbis and psukim. Which in a simple reading certainly indicates what they say or part of what they say. So I guess what he's saying as far as this third group, because really Tchias HaMeisim is something which everybody agrees to, whatever other views you have, but maybe this third group just focuses on that and says, you're doing mitzvahs, do it to get Tchias HaMeisim, and whatever else happens, don't think so much about it. It's not something which you can really, but Tchias HaMeisim is the kind of thing that you should focus on. That's what I think, because I don't really see why Tchias HaMeisim is against anything else.
All three approaches are against each other. Which one are you focused? Which is the ultimate good? Which are we focused on?
What is your basic motivator in terms of what you think about when you?
We can actualize all three, saying that they all
might all agree. All could happen. Right, yeah.
People die now. They're done Eden.
Right, everything could happen.
Tchias HaMeisim.
Right. Everything is possible. Yes.
So we all say that the first opinion will lack.
I don't know. I think everybody has Tchias HaMeisim. First two groups also have Tchias HaMeisim. The third group has Tchias HaMeisim. I guess it just means the Rambam by setting up as a separate point of view. Maybe that this is focus on that. The focus on the Tchias HaMeisim as being the ultimate good that you strive to achieve. You want to be able to say, I will get Tchias HaMeisim. Now once there's Tchias HaMeisim, then of course you presume, expect everything will be better. The world will be a better place, it will be a pleasant, wonderful place to live in. Whether it's the first view, which is more like the kind of world that we know about, or the second view, which is more of a fantastic world which we don't really know about, that you don't really think so much about, but you think more about the Tchias HaMeisim. That's what the third group says. Katyuvis, the fourth group. Tachshov ki hakavanah shetagiyah lanu b'atzias ha-mitzvos hi menuchas haguf v'hasogas hatavos ha-olamiyos b'olam hazeh. They say that the goal of mitzvot is to have a some kind of physical tranquility and achieving the pleasures, desires of this world, kamo shumana ratzot, like getting the fat of countries, nechasim rabim, have a lot of wealth, rov abanim, many children, biyut haguf, health, hashalom, peace, bitachon, security, heyot hamelech Yisrael, have a Jewish king, heyotenu sholtem al misha heitzelanu, we will control those who are enemies of ours, v'ra'ash et hasigenu kishenichba, nichba ala Torah, and if we go against the Torah, we get evil. Hepech enonim le'elu, the reverse of these things. K'mo ma'ash anachmo po ayom b'zman ha'galut, like what we suffer now in the Galut. V'avi urayik t'fis v'arasam, kol ha'mikro she'b'torah v'aklolos, and the Pusa, all the psukim of blessings and curses in the Torah, kol ha'otam ha'sipum ha'tzum v'mikro, all the stories in the Mikra. So this view is, like we'll call that, the most limited, perhaps, view of Olam Haba. The Olam Haba just basically is the achievement of the brachos of the Torah. The brachos of the Torah are peace, security, good health, the dreams and wishes of every person, every country in the world. Nothing supernatural in this dream. It's close to the first approach. But the first approach is a little bit more of a Gan Eden.
This is
this world. Yeah, this maybe it's not called Gan Eden, but it's called Olam Haba. And Olam Haba is just the blessings of this world, which means good health, peace, tranquility, good family, so on.
Also, Olam Shehayu. Olam Haba is really Olam Shehayu. I mean, Shehaya is what I meant.
What do you mean, Shehaya? Why?
Gan Eden. This is what we had originally.
Yes.
And that's what we seek to reach in the end. Olam Haba is really Olam Shehaya.
It's the circle. They're going around in the circle.
But hopefully the end could pause at that point in the circle.
Right, exactly. That's correct. Good, you're saying well. That's good. Okay, Kat Chamisha. Fifth group. Mahabim, Mahabim, and Yonim, and Eilu Kulam. A lot of people in the fifth group. Mahabim, and Yonim, and Eilu Kulam. They put all of these ideas together. Omrim, they say, Hatochelet, so what we dream about, or our goal is Shavah Mashiach. So first we have a Mashiach. Yechayah Meisim, he will bring back the dead to life. Vikansu Gan Eden, people will go to Gan Eden. Yochushon V'yishtu, they'll have a good physical life. Yudriyim, they'll be healthy. Kol Yimos Olam, forever.
Mashiach will facilitate resurrection?
That's how we say. That's how he describes this point. If you put it all together.
Like
Eliyahu Navi will. It will be part of the Med Mashiach. Okay. Aval, Zuan Nakuda Niflais. Now, Niflais might be wonderful or might be hidden. But the hidden or wonderful point, but what I call, I guess he means Olam Haba, Ma'at Timtza V'Shum Ponim Shiala Libo. Very few people really think about that. Hu Shiach Shol O Shikach Zei Ikar. Well, people don't really know exactly what the word Olam Haba refers to. Him who tachlis hatova, is that the ultimate good? Or atas min adeos hakodmot, who a tachlis, one of the previous ideas is the goal. Sheavdil bein atachlis v'bein hasiba, v'avil atachlis. Okay. Here, in a certain way, he's sort of hinting towards his own view. His own view is that all of these things which he mentions here as four different ideas, most probably, most likely, all of them have truth to them, and if all are parts of maybe these different things will all occur, but none of them, according to the Rambam, is what's referred to as Olam Haba. These are, whether it's Yimot HaMashiach, and so on, it's not Olam Haba, because all of these previous ideas have a physical, corporeal factor which is part of the existence of the person, either it's like this world, or he lives forever, or he's healthy, or whatever it is, he's living in a body of sorts. The Rambam himself, as we'll see later on, his theory that all of this is, yes, there are many psukim which speak about this, and there are many Divrei Chazal, but he says this is still not what he calls himself Olam Haba. Olam Haba is basically all of this is gone, and we are pure spirits, pure neshama, and it's a completely different existence. You can't even imagine it. It's beyond human imagination. Human imagination goes up to, but does not include, what he calls Olam Haba. Olam Haba is Ayin Lo Rasa. It's something which is beyond imagination. All we know is that it's not physical. It doesn't have any kind of pleasure that we can even imagine. But we do know that Yafa Shah Achas, but we do know that it has an incredible existence, which is certainly something which is very exalted. But that comes to later on. So he sort of makes a statement. He says he doesn't think anybody has really focused on that so much. Abu Masha showed him Ha'am Kulo, Ha'amom, V'hamivinim, but people really question, and people, scholars, talk about Eich Yakum HaMeisim. They want to know, when you get out of the grave, are you going to be Arumim or Levushim? Will you have clothing or not? Im Yamdu Botam Tachrichim Atzmam Shenikbu Behem Berikmasam Uvitziyuram V'yiput Furasam. Will they have the original garments they were buried in with all the fancy clothing of Malbush Shirchasagu from Bobada, where they got out of the grave with just a plain cover?
He
says that's what people are talking about. They want to try to figure out more details about Tchias HaMeisim, or more details about the Yemos HaMashiach. This is what
people
are
talking about. Nothing
to. Well, some people think that you could figure it out, maybe by looking at Psukim, looking at Midrashim. You could get information. Yeah. Yeah.
The question is basically the essence of what the Tchias HaMeisim is going to be. Is it a real resurrection in its most visible sense? And on a certain level, the question also might be absurd, just on the resurrection, might not, at least conceptually, it might just be that all the neshamas are going to be together, but it's not a real night to life kind of thing. That's one way you could. And the question is very practical. Could be a very practical one. It could be a very practical one also. The answer will solve what it's all about.
Yeah. What do you understand?
When he uses the words like evolution and stuff like that, he's just talking about actual clothing.
Actual clothing. Yeah. Actually, there's a big discussion which I happen to looking at on Shabbos. A huge discussion in Tosfos about this question, because it's a very Megel Halacha L'Maisa. I recommend that you take a look at the Gemara Nida on Daf Samach Aleph on the base, and can follow that up with a bunch of Tosfos and Baba Bas. Samach Aleph on the base of Masechta Nida. The discussion of Masechta Nida is as follows: Mitzvos Betelos La'asad Lavo. Will mitzvos continue in the future, or they going to be suspended, no more mitzvos. What's no gay? Okay, Shmuel said that you can take shatnez and you can bury a dead person, tachrichim of shatnez. You can take shatnez, we know, is woolen linen. Woolen linen is prohibited to be worn if you're alive. What about a dead person? Can I bury a dead person in shatnez? So then we'll be doing an avei of wearing shatnez. So Shmuel says that you can do it, because he says, meisim achavshim in a mitzvah. Dead people are not obligated to do mitzvahs.
But when he's resurrected, he's going to be wearing shatnez.
So the question is, when he comes back to life, he'll be wearing shatnez. So the Gemara makes a statement. So there's a big question. The Gemara makes a statement that according to Shmuel, mitzvos betelos la'asalava, mitzvos will not exist in the future. Which means if he's resurrected wearing the shatnez, so that's not a problem, because there will be no mitzvos in the future. Which, but there's a big machlokas that the Gemara really means that. Actually, it's a machlokas in the Rambam. And Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen, Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam's great student. The Rabbeinu Tam's great student, Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen, he interpreted Gemara literally that after Tchiyas HaMeisim there are no more mitzvos and there's no problem wearing shatnez. And Tosfos says that we have a practice that bury people with a talus, but we remove tzitzis from the talus. So instead of having four corners with tzitzios, he only has three. The reason we don't want to have four is because since he's dead, he's part of for mitzvos, so to have him wear a talus with four tzitzios, kosher tzitzis, is lowered the rush. It's insulting him. It's making fun. He's saying, look, a dead person doing mitzvahs. Ha ha ha. A dead person cannot do mitzvahs. So that's, but we don't want him to be buried without a talus, because a Jew should wear a talus. So we put it on with only three. But then Tosfos says, they have a huge problem. He wakes up, Tchiyas HaMeisim, he's going to have a talus with only three tzitzis. It's not vera.
So you stick in another, you know, thingy and you put it on when he's...
Okay, so... No.
Matt, he's still wearing whatever
he's wearing. Wake up wearing a towel.
Oh, but he wakes up at night.
Wakes up.
She has
amazing
at night
time, and then it's safe. It's at night, it's part of that's a good solution. there are a lot of different solutions which Tosfos has about this issue.
Also, you don't need tzitzis on a four-corner garment because you're sleeping. You're sleeping with the garment.
You could say it's a beggar's mace.
It's a blanket. Or it's a blanket.
Okay, you could say it's a beggar's mace. It's part of the consensus. Because it's not made for Mavisha. That's one of the answers that Shefa Chassifa. Anyway, but many of the Mephoshim disagree and say you can't have the fellow, the mace, without kosher tzitzis in the talus, because he's going to wake up. He should have kosher tzitzis in the talus. Maybe you don't want it to be such an insult, so maybe you should stick the tzitzis into some kind of pocket, so it's not so seen. So someone won't say, oh, it's a make a joke. So people don't see the tzitzis, but really the tzitzis are there attached.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
That would be one of the solutions to the problem. But in any event, in that particular discussion of the Gemara Day and indeed the Samachal with the Tosfos, comes up this huge machlokas. The Rambam, of course, we know Mishnah Torah says, "Ein mitzvahs betelos la'asalava." Mitzvahs will not change at all, and he even puts it as one of the ikrim, one of the fundamental tenets of Jewish faith, that we say when we say "Ani Mamen," "Shekol HaTorah," "Ani Suno LeMoshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom." Loved his battle, loved to Shaneh, would say the same forever. But the Kontasvis, the mitzvahs are potatoes. This, by the way, why I got into this, because there's a famous Rabbeinu Bachaye in this past week's parsha. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, Osir, Chazir, Nitar, in the future, the chazir will become kosher. Chazir. So it's a part of the theory of Mrs. Potato's loss of love. But even though...
No, the opposite.
Well, how can a chazir become tar?
No. Maybe he starts to chew his cud. And there's no tar. There is no tar.
No, it says that he will become tar.
Exactly.
If he's a trade animal, his person
is... But then there's no tar. There's no mitzvah, there's no tar.
If you say Mrs. Apotelos loss of love. But let's say you say Mrs. Anapotelos, it's just the same
mitzvah. No, it's exactly the same. It becomes the opposite. It's exactly the opposite. He's saying that in the future, pig will become kosher. That means that there's such an Indian as kosher.
No.
It's saying that pig will undergo some kind of
change of
transformation,
change
that it'll become kosher.
Or you said it'll be a mutation.
It'll be right.
Oh, if you say that's a sub-mutation.
Because then everything is kosher, because the idea of kosher doesn't exist. So he's saying
if everything is kosher, yeah,
so
right.
So he's possibly
only in pigs. That's true. But that's what they want to say. That the Rebbe B'chayim recommend, like you're saying, that there'll be a mutation. That nowadays our pigs have split hooves, but they don't chew their cud. They don't have one stomach. Cows have four stomachs, so it goes up and down, up and down. But so in the future, there'll be a pig which will have two stomachs, so it'll chew its cud. But that's not just a simple teretz, because there's a discussion of Sechet B'choros. If a non-kosher animal has a mutation and gives birth to a mutant offspring which has the kosher signs, split hooves, chews the
animal.
Let's say a chamor, in most cases a chamor gives birth to a kevis. If a donkey, a mother donkey, a chamora, gives birth to a baby sheep. Well, today it's possible because we can do that.
It's incredible that they have
that. We can do embryonic transfer.
Right.
So let's say a donkey gives birth to a fetus, which is a sheep. Do I consider that a sheep kosher or is that kosher? Huh?
I'd say
it's not kosher. Does it have a rule? That if a trade animal produces a product,
right.
Let's say a donkey gives milk, so the milk is trade. If a trade bird lays an egg, the egg is trade. So it says, same way, if a donkey gives birth to a sheep, the sheep is
now. But if it's a sheep offspring, I didn't say that the sheep's offspring are coming.
Oh, that's good. Now that's exactly the question. So the Mefarshim say that's only the first generation. But now the question is, if that sheep, which is let's say a female, goes and has a baby sheep, so now that second generation sheep didn't come out of a donkey, it came out of a sheep.
But it came out of a car, which was something common.
Right, so the question is, do I consider the sheep, first sheep, really a donkey which looks like a sheep? So it has a baby, it's still a donkey.
I would say
that first sheep is really a sheep, but it has an issue of a donkey, because it's yotze.
Second
generation,
you can't check that.
It might not be so linear, though, also. It might not just be that it's a mutation in a pig, and now we have pigs that are this way, and we have to have
pigs
that shine. It could be that all pigs change.
Yes.
If all pigs change, it's a...
Maybe
the miracle. There's a miracle that all of a sudden God makes.
That there's still a halacha of kashrus.
According to the Ben of Chaim,
it has to be
because he's not being mad at the pigs. He's not being mad at everything else. Correct.
Also,
I heard that
sheep
is
sheep.
You know,
sheep from a donkey. It's like I believe it would be Thomas. But it's not like you can check the yid, like somebody getting married, you can check the yichus of the sheep, you know? It's not like when you go to Shechter Adam, you're not checking to see who the cow's mother and grandmother are.
Well, you need to keep records, otherwise you wouldn't have a shayla. That's the case where we kept the records.
Oh, so I guess the records are kept, avoided.
You have to. Such a mitzvah happens. If I have a donkey which gives birth to a sheep, you better tell
me. If you don't know who to eat, you don't worry. But I mean,
I'm sure they talk about this.
But if there's none... If you make milk, you discover a new animal.
Yeah, well, so the reverse thing. What happens if a kosher sheep has a mutant and gives birth
pig.
To a pig.
Kosher lechatchila b'dieved, you can eat it all the way.
Actually, the Gemara said that it's not kosher.
Wait, an egg is kosher? Are you choosing to cut it or not?
It's not kosher. Let's say a sheep gives birth to a mutant baby sheep, and this baby sheep which comes out doesn't pass clip hooves. It's called kalut. It does chew its cud. It looks like a sheep, but it doesn't have clip hooves because of mutation. It has only one hoof.
Cut the hooves.
That's kosher. That's a machlokas between Rav Shimon and the Chachamim.
No, we don't know the kosher. So like
one
that.
Man down. I think we pass, but it's not kosher. But according to Rav Shimon, I think it is kosher.
We have to avoid it, doesn't it? That whole klava doesn't, certainly doesn't apply to fish.
Fish.
Right, if there's anything from eggs, then Yetzi, that's all.
Okay,
fish.
So anyway,
you have to check the
Simonim
on each.
So, therefore, like, getting back to. So therefore he says that the Rambam says that people are focused on all of these questions about Olam Haba. What will be when people come back to life? How will they look, etc., etc.? People get all, as I said, it's not just a theoretical question, but it's a halakhic question which has to do with burying people. How do you bury people? What kind of clothing, palace, client, etc.?
Okay. So what does Shulchan Aruch says about this? If a cow gives birth to pig, is it kosher or not?
If a cow gives birth to a pig, is it kosher? Kalut. It's not, I believe we pass and it's not kosher.
Not kosher.
I believe that's how we pass.
The other way around
is
not
kosher. Also not kosher. But the Issa may not be the real issue of a not kosher animal. In other words, it might be a new issue, but it, and the difference would be the third generation. If we say that the issue of that first generation is that we really consider it not kosher and as a species, a min, then it can go on and on and on. However, if we say that it's just a special issue because it was born in this mutation crazy way, the Torah says don't eat it, but fundamentally it's still kosher, then the next generation is not any more mutation. The next generation is already
confirmed to me.
It's already the second time. Generation later might be kosher. Could be kosher.
We don't know the answer to it. So why would we just try to avoid it and fix what we have already?
So far we do avoid it. People haven't tried yet to do this, but it may happen because they're starting to do now things like cloning and genetic engineering. Once they start doing things like this, 25 years from now, you could have these kind of questions, real questions.
I think they did already in Oxford, a pig which has four stomachs, like a cow. And actually,
they bred a pig like this already?
Right. So this is what I heard.
That would be the question, a pig which has stomachs and like
four
a cow.
Four stomachs.
Right.
It's going exactly the same way like a cow.
It might become kosher, right?
And it's not eating all the stuff like a regular pig is eating.
Okay.
I mean, so a pig is eating basically
it could be become kosher. Certainly,
it's only in the circus, by the way.
The second or third, second generation.
We don't have the ability to pass them on things like this.
We do. There are Gemaras. I said there are Gemaras in the Masechet Bechoros which discuss exactly this kind of a case of a donkey giving birth to a sheep or a sheep giving birth to a donkey.
So technically,
if you go through those Gemaros and work out how it works out, you should be able to come to a halachic decision, which I'm sure if this kind of a pig starts getting bred in quantities and starts bringing its meat to the market.
Bred, was it genetically engineered or bred?
Genetically engineered, you said.
Genetically engineered. This is a division of Oxford.
Isn't that also a problem, genetically engineered or not? Like, isn't that
right
a problem?
The Oxford.
No, so the question is after the fact. If it's happened, so what do you do with it?
Oh, no, because you know, they can genetically engineer chickens to make them without heads and without certain like body parts, so they
can
just cook
them
right in the oven.
Anything like that, or all the genetic engineering, which will affect the simonim of kashrus. And we have two simonim with animals, which are split hooves and chewing the cud. Fish, you have fins and scales. birds, you have other things. So
birds are the
same. Or genetic engineering, which will change the simanim. We will definitely, without any question, I'm sure there will be halachic discussion with Makolos.
So the first one is definitely us. Like this first pig that he's talking about from Oxford is definitely, there's not a question that.
I would think so, but I'm not sure. I mean, again, I can't pass
it
about without sufficient research.
Yeah,
the top of my head, I would think that the first pig like that would be not kosher because it would be in form of yotzei, coming out of something else. Once you go beyond that, the second stage might not be a yotzei anymore. Yes?
Can you just explain the hashkafa of mitzvahs? It seems to me that like
some of the Rishonim,
you want to say that religion means that what we're commanded to do is forever and ever, and what the reality of how good the world is going to be shouldn't necessarily change that series of instructions.
Well, I think that the mitzvahs b'telos logo concept, which I might repeat again, but those are the Rishonim mentioned based on the Gemara. I would think that according that the concept is rooted in the idea that the Yetzer Hara is gone, that we're back to Adam and Rishon before the Chet, and the Torah was only basically given with mitzvos and lo ta'aseis to control the Yetzer Hara. And if I don't have a Yetzer Hara, then these mitzvos are b'telos. Now, of course, those who disagree could disagree on two levels. First of all, they could say there will be a Yetzer Hara.
Right.
So you need...
Well, the one Yetzer Hara is not the Yetzer Hara.
They're right. There was a Yetzer Hara Nachash. There'll still be a Yetzer Hara even if you go back to pre.
This kind of approach to mitzvahs in general, then through the lens for the antinomianism that...
If mitzvahs are just for Yetzer Hara. Or you could say mitzvahs have other things, the spiritual food concept, that the soul needs this.
There's no chance you don't need it,
right?
But then you might not need it, right?
Because if it's medicine for Yetzer Hara, if it's only to remove the negative sickness of the Yetzer Hara, that won't be there. But if the mitzvahs are positive spiritual energy,
right,
which is not just Yetzer Hara, it means my Yetzer Tov, in order for my Yetzer Tov to function properly, it needs mitzvos, then there will be mitzvos lost at Lava.
Right. And so mitzvos are not on the Chabe, right? We want some semblance of society.
And then, of course, there's a third concept which might be happening here in this discussion. Some of the Mefarshim say that the human spirit will be so advanced that he'll be able to intuit mitzvot without having them spelled out.
That's the second approach. Maybe.
Yeah, like Avram Avinu before Matan Torah, Avram Avinu kept the Torah before it was given because he was such a naturally developed tzaddik that mitzvot were natural for him. It was just part of his everyday lifestyle, not to respond to a command. But you'll still do them, but you won't be forced to do them because you want to do them anyway. You don't have to be told, so you'll do it as a volunteer. That's what the third view could be. So there are three different views about it. If you say mitzvos are betelos, either they're just medicines for sickness of Yetzer Hara, and we don't need that because we won't have Yetzer Hara. B, that's if you say no. If you say yes, you could argue on different levels. You could say we will still have a Yetzer Hara. Or you could say without a Yetzer Hara, but we're doing it for the spiritual plus we get for the Yetzer Tov. Another thing you could say is that, and the other way, is that you're not doing them. You will do them, but you don't have to do them because you'll do it as an intuition rather than as a command.
There are approaches from this that there are ways to be close to God outside of the prescribed positives and negatives.
Right? Yeah, right. If
which
you say,
which certainly lends itself for the Shabbat Tzvi, that's a some understanding.
The Shabtai Tzvi was a distortion, a corruption of the Mrs. Batalis Lassad Lobo concept. Shabtai Tzvi,
what did he do?
He said he committed adultery with women.
Among other,
he says, because it's Timos HaMashiach and Mrs. Batalis Lassad Lobo.
How does a man commit adultery?
He took another man's wife and he married her. But he said, I'm a Mashiach, I can do it. Because it's already the end of mitzvah.
His whole lore, that it's not...
That's not
Matir Asurim, it's Matir Isurim.
Matir Isurim. So of course it was crazy, because first of all, he was not Mashiach, so that was the whole thing.
But the whole perspective, I mean, their approach, people read approaches like this in Ramban, people read approaches like this in Ramchal, that there are ways outside of the
Dalai Lama's of Halacha. Well, the Kubbalim, there's a certain strong school among the Kubbalim of Mitzvahs Betelus Lassad Lava. There's no question about it. There is such a school. But they're not saying it for Olam Hazeh. They're saying that it's going to be in the future, because they basically feel that the future man will go back to where he was before the Eitz Hadas. And I think that they feel that he will intuit ways to serve Hashem, so he'll do mitzvos on an intuitive level rather than an imperative level, and maybe there'll be other intuitions that he might have.
Meaning ways that he feels to serve Hashem?
Right, but that's always for, that's what they say was the chet of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, they jumped the gun, in other words, they were trying, they thought it was Yemos HaMashiach. They thought that the building of the Mishkan of God's fire meant this was the tikkun, the ultimate fixing of the world. Therefore, you don't have to follow the rules anymore of mitzvahs. You can do things which you intuit, which you think is the way to do it. That's exactly the sin of Nadav and Aviv, according to Mekubalim.
Some forms of Hasidus, this is also...
Hasidus, yes, some Mekubalim Hasidus have a tendency towards that.
The peasant boy who plays his recorder for Kol Nidre.
Yeah, sure.
His mitzvah, this is all...
It's part of the same...
Something beyond their mitzvahs.
Right, it's part of the theory, and it expresses itself in different things, stories, and maybe certain things, correct. And that's why Shulchan Gaon didn't like, because he didn't want people to, God forbid, fall into the Shabtai Tzvi. Because Shabtai Tzvi, there's always been a tension between the Snagdim and the Hasidim. The Hasidim coming up with more of this intuitive freestyling, and the Snagdim being very afraid that you might lose the basic framework. So they don't like the freestyling things. The Hasidim are more into freestyling. Yes? Moshe.
At the Shabbos table, we were talking about another video and how the brunch one was because, you know, they were trying to add next. So somebody at the table, I don't know who it was, asked, what about Minhagim that we had, you know? How do we arrive at the Minhagim? Aren't we essentially doing the same
up
there that they did? And I don't remember
what
the answer that
Rav
Sef gave, but...
Well, the Rav, Rabbi always liked to push a minhag into a pre-existing Torah or the Rabbanon category. In a certain way, the Rambam asked the question in Mishnah Torah. He says, isn't the Takana the Rabbanon or a minhag violation of the law? Lo Yosef, you're not allowed to add anything to the Torah. And the Rambam says, well, when you do it, you have to say it's only a minhag, it's not from the Torah. By saying what it is, you get the license to do it. That's on a technical level. But you probably have to say that the rabbis and Jewish people have a certain intuition which the Torah allows to express itself, as long as it's done within the limits of what it is.
The Muna, that whatever we have the merit of understanding is given to us by from a kind of world.
Right, God works
through. And if we derive to a certain long decision as a result of the Torah, because Hashem allowed that to enter our thought.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's but I definitely a very sensitive area. And a very tricky area, this whole freestyling and innovation and minhagim, And this is one of the issues we have, especially in the modern world, because the modern world is very much into the freestyling, because it's basically an ignorant world, so it doesn't know much about what the things you're supposed to do or not supposed to do, so it makes up a lot of things as it goes along the way, well-meaning, but it creates a freestyle atmosphere which has its pluses and its minuses, and that's those of us who are Rabbanim in this modern world, we have to grapple with this all the time. Sometimes you get a minug, some new, I call the American minhagim. Some of them are very nice, and some of them are really absurd. So, the Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos speaks about that minhagim, which are good, and minhagim shtus, you have to be mabatel them.
Rabbeinu Tam says that you have to mabatel them?
If the minhag is a shtus, you have to stop it.
What's minhag spelled backwards?
Gehenom. So, you have to look at every American minhag, which people are freestyling, especially in the modern Orthodox world, and see, you know, whether these things are reasonable or these are crazy. Like, I want to mention a few things which I consider
nice,
and a few things which I consider crazy. Standing up at the wedding for the chasna and the kala, which is certainly a new thing in America, I consider nice.
What? Oh, standing up when they...
When they walk down the aisle. It's a new minhag. It's a new thing.
The chasna
supposedly
has no
seder
on. It's derived from some idea that the chasna is way the kala chasna.
Okay, so it's there's some way of explaining it. It's within a Torah concept. Someone doing a mitzvah. It has Torah concepts which it fits into, so I find that's fine. Standing up for the flower girl as she walks down is crazy. You don't stand up for the flower girl. Sorry, it's a new thing. They start standing up for everybody, the flower girl. Bobby Zaidi, I also don't
think maybe, so.
And starting, what do Bobby Zaidi then? They do the brothers and the sisters and the flowers.
Yeah,
the
is, you know?
If he's an old man, if he's a 90-year-old man, yes. But if he's only...
That's only within dollar dollars, though.
Okay, within dollar dollars. So that's an area. Some other things which are going on, you know,
I was just at a wedding recently, a conservative wedding, so you can imagine there are a lot of different things. First, I had a couple problems with it. My first thing was, what happened? They didn't break the plate during the
Kabbalah's panim.
Yeah.
By the tonight.
They didn't break the plate. I asked